You're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Don on the line. G'day, Don. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Annie. How are you? And I send my best wishes to all of your listeners.
Yeah, yeah, that was pretty creepy stuff that Kevin finished off with, wasn't it?
Yes. I think you have pure gold with Kevin, and the insights are so powerful, and I just wish he could be heard more often by more people across the country.
Well, all they have to do is go to our podcast. Today, I've got you on the line here because we want to talk about productivity, because apparently in the halls of power and in the boardrooms of the corporates, the talk is all about record low productivity. And I was wondering, why should we care?
Well, from the point of view of workers, there are two ways of understanding productivity. And productivity is actually a big deal no matter which way you look at it. The mainstream way of looking at productivity is, of course, through the prism of money. That is, the value of new production divided by the cost of all the inputs that led to that new production. So that produces, you know, numbers like GDP divided by working time, usually, the number of hours worked to produce that new GDP. However, workers do not experience productivity in that way in the first instance. And this is one of the reasons why we should care about it. Workers experience productivity and productivity improvement as a physical relationship, not as a money relative to time or relative to the cost of inputs. They experience it as a physical relationship based upon the expenditure of their physical and mental energy at work. So productivity becomes the number of widgets that they make every working hour, or the tons of ore that they dig and lift and shift, or the kilometres they drive, or the number of patients they care for, or how many students there are in their class, and divided that by their time at work, they experience productivity and productivity improvement as a physical experience. It's production related to the effort of those workers over time, whether they are the cleaners who make sure that hospitals are safe from disease, especially during the pandemic, that before and since as well. And it includes mining workers, and it includes manufacturing workers and so on. It does not include people like Alan Joyce, CEOs. They do not experience productivity in those terms because they don't produce any useful value. Only workers do that. So when we see a picture of Alan Joyce standing around on a tarmac talking to a couple of engineers about how to solve baggage loading problems, he is not adding to productivity. The workers who actually do that work will be the ones who experience any productivity change that occurs.
Yeah, but he would say that he was applying his mind and his systemic understanding to enhance that work that those workers are involved in.
If that depends upon whether the workers obey purely what he wants them to do, which is to work harder over less time. The time element in productivity is the first step to understanding what can be called the productivity trick. In physical effort, muscles and nerves go to work, often repeated, and often repeated at a speed that generally speaking, overwhelmingly, the speed is not controlled by the workers themselves, especially not these days. If you go back 30 or 40 years, a lot of workers were engaged in industrial struggles to control the speed of work.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, if you work for Amazon, I mean,
Well, it's a huge issue in the emergence of unionism in Amazon, is the speed of work. So there is a sense in which that struggle over and seeking to control the speed of work is re-emerging nowadays. All sorts of things happen to workers in this physical effort, and that includes their the impact upon their emotional being. Most workers want to do a really good job. The satisfaction of getting a job well done can be compromised by workers not being able to control the speed of work, and they get frustrated. And that's why so many nurses and teachers not wanting to work in those professions anymore, because their lifeblood of wanting to care for others and teach others has been sucked out of them by the demands of productivity improvement. That is, caring for teaching more people than they should be.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about, you know, statistics. Analysis has become more important than the reality. If you go back down to Taylorism, which was about time and motion, I read a fascinating account of Taylor, who was, you know, obviously a man on the spectrum, but he actually imagined, because he was a working class man, he imagined that his new process of time and motion would actually improve people's working lives, because they'd get through their jobs faster and then they could have more leisure.
Well, I don't want to get too bogged in Taylorism, but
concept of time and motion and productivity. That's what I'm saying. The difference between workers' view of it and the moneyed class's view of it.
There were two things going on with Taylorism, which was time and motion study to enable tasks to be broken down so that each task could be so simple that even a monkey could do it, to quote, which is one of the things that Taylor said. But the second thing was the construction of an ideological justification for the taking humanity out of the labour process. And that included that, you know, the justification that there would be more leisure time. And, of course, that turned out to be not true. And it was never intended to be true. So the physical experience of workers, if we go back to this very basic idea that is not discussed in mainstream discussions about productivity now, nor will it be willingly discussed in the next few months, is what productivity improvement does to the physical, mental well-being of workers. And it's generally destructive. It's generally negative. The other part of all of this that I find very interesting from the point of view of trying to win a better deal for workers, not just in wages, but in terms of working time, which touches on the point that you were making about Taylorism, is that inside working time, there is also non-productive time. And these are moments when work is not being done, or not being done as intensely as what is intended by the managers who work for the employer. These moments of non-productive time inside working time are the momentary releases from the intensity of productive effort upon the brains and the bodies of the workers. And it's in the real world of work, every worker searches for those moments. And in some workplaces, workers help each other to find them.
Oh, this because is such a lovely concept.
To be able to get through the working time period.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's a relief. You get these moments of relief. Another example of non-productive time, of course, are supply delays or faulty components, internet and power outages. These are also non-productive time.
Fire alarms.
And what the employer's always interested in. And these are moments of relief for the workers. Unless there are certain things done, and as is more common these days, to ensure that they are either unpaid in that period or that they are trying to help all the problems. So from the employer and manager viewpoint, non-productive time is a problem. And their daily obsession is an unrelenting quest to eliminate non-productive time. The good employer might tolerate some non-productive time, but they'll say something like, well, there has to be a bit of extra effort afterwards to make up for it. And they'll say something like, well, that's only fair, isn't it? And there is a superficial sense in which most people accept that idea, that if there's been a bit of non-productive time, then you should make up for it. So the worker experience is different. And generally speaking, it's damaging. And it doesn't matter whether you are a teacher, a nurse, the cleaner in a hospital, whether you're a childcare worker, or whether you're a manufacturing worker, or whether you're a miner, or whether you drive a truck up and down the freeway. The physical experience of productivity ought to be the starting point. Are you going to be subjected to doing more intense work in less time, and what will be the consequences?
Well, it's interesting you should say this, because Aldi has just recently been pulled up for expecting workers to turn up 15 minutes early and do free labour. And now they've got a back pay bill on their hands.
Yes, yes. And the absolute obsession of employers is to be able to change the law. So that type of, dare I say, informal, in inverted commas, extension of the working day. Well, we go way back to Marx and the wonderful chapter on the working day in his book Capital. This is what we're talking about in the 20s. This is 2021, and Marx's analysis of the working day, which was the most profound at its time, suddenly turns up as a feature of what employers would like to do in our times here in the early 2020s.
This is tied to productivity and profit. I mean, because what's going on at the moment for working people is the increase in employers' desire to casualise and to use labour hire, not only offloading their HR responsibilities and costs, but also employing people at the drop of the hat without any conditions. That ties productivity to profit, doesn't it, in their mind?
Absolutely. There's an absolute link between, but it is disguised, between productivity and profitability. To understand that, there is just one more aspect to productivity, non-productive time part of the production, the period of working time that is what production is all about, the numerator, if you like, in the division that produces productivity, that is production divided by inputs. And that is that non-productive time is actually potentially a source of workers' power. In other words, it goes slow, or an extended morning tea or lunch break is non-productive time. Slowing down the intensity of work is bargaining power, also. Now, it is a big mistake, therefore, for any union leader, whether they're at the union delegate level or at a national level or anywhere in between, to engage in productivity improvement discussions in such a way that the productive time for bargaining power is given away.
Mm.
And yet that is what tripartite discussions, no matter what level, are all about. To give away, the employers want workers to give away their power to use non-productive time.
Very interesting.
A better deal on health and safety or wages or working time. So,
Which actually goes back to my original question, what's in it for me?
Well, it's a question of, I think that question is goes in the right direction. But it's let's rephrase it. How can productivity improvement bargaining be useful for workers in general? And the starting point must be understanding how productivity works as a physical experience and its impact upon workers. And then when we get to the money form, if you like, of productivity, how it can lead to gains for workers in terms of the pace of work, the intensity of work, their ability to control decision-making at work, also about leisure time and so on and how that leisure time might be used. It also connects to wages. Because if it doesn't, you've got wages suppression, which means the productivity improvement that might lead to more leisure time can't be enjoyed because you've got to have enough money to spend it on the leisure that you'd like to spend it on or ought to be able to spend it on. So there are interactions in all of these things that are crucial as well. The link to profits, this is a big question. What links the two is time. So productivity is the value of new production. So GDP at the national level, gross domestic product at the national level, divided by the number of hours worked. And at an industry level, it's the new value industry. It's called industry value added versus the value versus the number of hours worked. So that's how they work it at the macro. And the same sort of concept applies at the workplace level as well, the company level, employer level. The new value divided by the number of hours worked. But when you think about what is new value, in essence, it's profits plus wages. And there we have the beginning of the link. Because in any period of working time, there are two values produced, both wages and profits, in every single moment of that working time. And the volume of profit relative to wages gives us the rate of exploitation. And that's the link.
So where does that all leave us workers in this next round of discussions that the government's obviously going to be having?
Well, in terms of the government's we're now turning to the context in which all of this stuff about productivity improvement is going to be talked about. And the first thing is that the government has inherited momentum towards a serious downturn in the economy, possibly a recession. It's not possibly in some other major capitalist countries. It's actually happening as a recession, including in the United States. A recession is happening. So this is what the government has inherited, is this momentum towards that. And some listeners will remember that Keating, as Prime Minister, once talked about a recession we have to have, and he got bollocked for it big time. But it's actually a reality. In capitalism, recessions must happen every 7 or 8 years, plus or minus, depending on the circumstances. They must happen. They're in the DNA of any capitalist system. So we're probably heading into one, how severe it will be, whether it will be a serious downturn or a recession or worse. We don't know yet exactly. One aspect of it is that it's being speeded up and in some ways forced by the decisions of the Reserve Bank.
Yes, I was going to say.
So there is a deliberate character to it, not just, if you like, a systemic character to it. So that's
that's right.
Now, so the second part of this is the budget. What will the government do in the October budget and then again in the May budget? And that's not very long. That's 8 months. Right? Just less than 8 months. What will it do in its first two budgets about productivity improvement? And that's where there are big questions about what will it do to protect employers from having to spend a bigger proportion of their profits on new equipment and machinery to modernise their operations.
Well, you know, the thing about using productivity as the increase as the point of reference, strikes me that it's constantly characterising any problems as if it's a deficit in workers rather than deflecting attention from the role of capital.
That's very true. And even Labor economists are very weak on that. So what you see, for example, is that, you know, we know that there has been significant increases in the volume of profits going to employers, including relative to wages, of course, which is all about increasing the rate of exploitation. But the proportion of those profits that are being reinvested to maintain and modernise the equipment that workers must work with during their working time has fallen significantly. And that includes in a couple of the really crucial industries, particularly in manufacturing. And so the only substitute for that, that is, of course, they're then doing other things, which is pure wealth-taking.
Yeah, it's called lazy capitalists.
Yeah, and it ends up in inflated executive salaries and, you know, this amazing, the big shifts in inequality, the big increases in the standard of living for the top 5 or 1%
of the population,
and so on. But the other consequence of that is that if there is going to be a modernisation or, you know, of equipment and so on, then it comes out of the public purse.
And which is equally pathetic.
And the biggest contributor to the public purse is, of course, the working class through pay as you earn.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So workers, in a sense, are making the biggest contribution to what governments do to replace the investment in new equipment, machinery and buildings and so on that the private sector has withdrawn from.
Oh, talk about a bunch of leaners.
Well, what we're talking about is how all of these connect, when it comes to productivity, all of these connect, and productivity improvement is to solve the problem of profitability.
Yeah, touche, right to the end.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, the next big things about productivity are going to be the annual wage review and also what unfolds about changes to the Fair Work Act of 2009.
Oh, yes.
And we are yet to see, because it's all happening in tripartite discussions, all formally being discussed at the moment, what might happen about workers' bargaining rights relative to employers' bargaining rights in industrial relations reform. And it's all about, you see, the annual wage review gets underway, the first step for next year's wage annual minimum wage increases, both the minimum national minimum wage and the award rates. That starts in late November, early December, with the announcement of the timetable.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything that Chalmers, as the Treasurer, has said so far about that is that points towards that they're not going to reproduce what they did just prior to this election, which was to endorse quite a significant pay increase for the lowest paid. That has to be balanced against productivity improvement. So this whole question of how productivity is understood will be decisive in keeping the minimum rates of pay, the national minimum and award rates, under control. And that'll all be dressed up in the name of inflation.
Yeah.
Even though it's not a factor. Inflation's all about supply problems, not about wages. So that's simplifying a bit, but that's in essence what that's all about. So that's the overall. One final point.
You have to be quick.
Yeah. Is that profitability depends upon increasing the rate of exploitation. And therefore, we must understand the current situation as being driven by serious problems in profitability. And that is yet to be talked about in both mainstream circles and in our own, if you like, progressive left-wing labour movement circle. And that might be something that we return to, because the new data on all of that will be available from the Australian Bureau of Statistics in the next month or so.
Oh, Don, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Absolutely
it's
fascinating.
A pleasure to be with you all, and solidarity forever, eh?
Yeah.